always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
And we're live. Welcome, everybody, here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I am Anthony Irwin, senior Lakers insider, as well as lead Lakers content creator for Offside. Joined on this fine Father's Day, what is left of my Father's Day, Sunday night, by you guys, hopefully. And today on the show, we're going to be talking about a weird, eventful, even though nothing happened, really, I guess, unless you're Aaron Wiggins, nothing really happened over the weekend. And yet there was so much noise about stuff that might happen over the weekend. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that. We're going to talk about the NBA draft, which is only a couple of days away. We had yet another beat reporter echo the sentiment of the amount of pressure that Rob Pelinka and the Lakers are facing by way of Luka Doncic. We'll talk about the Lakers' part in a potential Giannis mega deal that could feature anywhere from, well, it has to feature at least two teams, but could feature anywhere, any number above there from, you know, 3 to 5 to 7, who knows? So we'll talk a little bit about that. We'll discuss some of the noise I heard over the weekend about Khalil Ware and Isaiah Stewart, and why sometimes people get a little too focused on the name when the story is clearer when you zoom out. And then, as always, over the course of the show, if you guys have any questions or comments, and we already got a super comment that I saw a second ago, that I'm and if I see super comments or comments come in that are immediately worth noting, I will get to those. But otherwise, I will get to as many of them or all of them, who knows, towards the end of the show. But yeah, packed Sunday. Let's go ahead and dive in. After a quick reminder to please hit the like button, please subscribe to the channel. Please turn on notifications for the channel and to YouTube so you get the notifications to the channel. If you guys are listening to the show in the morning via podcast, please hit subscribe wherever it is that you get those podcasts. And also, as always, make sure you guys are checking in on the Offsides app. Offside.gg is the easiest way to find it. You know, just for, you know, I would like to pop into the chat for draft night. And you know, I have videos that go there. You know, as always, I'm an insider for them. So those, you know, quick little videos, those are going to live on Offside as well. So yeah, check out Offside. Use that promo code HMA on Prize Picks. And when you use the promo code and set a $5 lineup, you'll get $50 worth of free lineups from Prize Picks. So you can use that as well. And yeah, let's go ahead and dive on in, starting with kind of a course setter, a table setter for, you know, like how this weekend played out. So it's Saturday afternoon. And I put this picture out there on Twitter already. I probably should have loaded up here to the channel. But I was sitting there Saturday morning, as I told you guys and Pete, Friday. Saturday morning, I went out and played a round of golf. And before I played that round of golf, we had a wild storm that set in. So I went to bed Friday night around 1 a.m, which is, you know, kind of par for the course for me. With the plan to wake up at about 6:15, and then head on, you know, get ready, head on out to the course. Well, we had this crazy storm set in, so instead of waking up at, you know, 6:15 or whatever, I was up at like 4:30, and just couldn't go to bed because I was afraid that if I went to bed and fell too deeply into sleep, I was going to sleep through my alarm and miss my round of golf. So I wind up waking up, getting out of bed at like 5 a.m. and I'm groggy as shit. Go out and play a round. It was an okay round. Get back and am exhausted. So my couch, we have one of those L couches and we have what we call the coma corner, which if I lie down there or if Jen lies down there, the other party understands that the point is to take a nap. We're going to be there for a little while and we're just going to kind of zone out. And sometimes it works. Oftentimes the kids don't get the memo. And in this case, the kids didn't get the memo. And I became a one of the couch cushions essentially for my kids. So they both huddle up. They hadn't seen me all morning and they seem to like me quite a bit. So when they see me there on the couch, they see it is go time for snuggles and for tickles and for laughter and for all of this stuff. And out of nowhere, my phone just goes, you know, just, I don't have my phone on any kind of, I always have mine on vibrate. And I look over, I'm like, what the hell is going on? I figured I would look at the phone and there'd be a Shams notification that the Giannis trade had gone through. But instead it was text after text after text from agents, from league people, from other reporters, all of us talking about like this thing, you all got the message, right? And so, it was, you know, the source of speculation was the Giannis trade, which at the time on Saturday afternoon felt imminent, right? We even heard from a fellow offside reporter, Kuka Hale of who covers I'm sorry if I butchered your name, but he covers the Detroit Pistons for, I think, Locked On Pistons as well. And he said that Hero to the Pistons noise was increasing with the Pistons being potentially in on Hero. I started texting Lakers people. Hey, you know, that takes them out of the running for Reeves, right? Then got a couple random texts of like, well, they might not necessarily be on Hero and they might be making room for Reeves. Everybody was kind of all over the place on Saturday and I'm texting and I'm Googling and I'm doing on Spotrac. I'm on the trade machine. I'm doing all this with one hand as Miles is on my right side. Avery is sleeping on my left side. And eventually I'm like, guys, I'm sorry, I have to go record a video. And the reason that I decided that I needed to record a video was because I had heard from enough people that, yes, the Lakers are, in fact, interested in Isaiah Stewart to a point where they could potentially be in on a deal if it grows, right? Not that anything was imminent on that front. Nothing, you know, crazy, as I tried to say in the video. Just that they were asking Detroit about the price. They were asking Milwaukee about the price, if Milwaukee landed where, or if they landed Hawkes, what their price would be to reroute those guys to LA. If the Lakers were in on any of those guys and they helped facilitate the trade, would that lower the price? To what extent would it lower the price? All of that stuff. And that's where the video, the report that I released, which you can see on this channel, you can see on all my other other platforms, that's where that video kind of came from. And so that was Stewart, right? As we kind of moved into the evening, started hearing more and more noise about Khalil Ware, that the Lakers could potentially be in on him. That one felt more Pelinka-ish than Stewart, to be completely honest. And so where is this guy who has just absolutely tantalizing basketball talent, raw talent? He is athletic, he shot threes last year. He is tall enough to dissuade people from scoring at the rim. Like, there's a lot to like about Khalil Ware. But like, you know, as people pointed out on Twitter and as people pointed out on every comment section known to man that I posted to, people are like, that can't be enough. And I don't think it is enough, to be completely honest, whether it would be Ware or Stewart or even both of them. I don't think it would be both of them, but like the Lakers, you know, are on the clock, for a list center. That's what Luka Doncic is specifically asking for. To the organization, that is something that would help Rob Pelinka keep his job and keep his superstar happy. And so that is their priority heading into the offseason, is how can we get a center who would be good enough that Luka Doncic would see us as holding up our end of this partnership with Luka Doncic. And so Saturday, you know, we get all that noise. It's this crescendo of noise. It's going to happen. It's going to happen soon, right? It's going to happen. Like, come on, what is take? And eventually it doesn't happen. And over the rest of that evening and then into today, asking around, hey, what happened there? Like, what, you know, who, like, my theories essentially is that, like, all right, if it's Milwaukee leaking that a deal is close, they are trying to get Boston to include Jaylen Brown. If it's Miami saying that a deal is close, they are trying to apply public pressure to Milwaukee, you know, where everybody's just saying, like, come on, do the deal already. If it's Boston, there's no real reason for Boston to say that the deal was close. So basically it was between Milwaukee and Miami for who I thought was kind of pushing this narrative that the deal was close. And how close it got, to be completely honest, I do not know. I could not tell you. I, you know, one of the things that I always promise you guys and what I would hope separates me from, you know, grifters out there is that I am willing to tell you guys what I don't know. And I do not know how close any deal, how close anybody got to making a Giannis deal over the weekend. It was loud enough that I thought it was imminent. And the noise, from the Lakers standpoint was loud enough that I thought it was worth reporting on even over Father's Day weekend. But to what extent the deal got close, I could not tell you, and I cannot tell you. So I will not tell you. And so like, as far as like the, you know, situation here, as we head into draft week, everybody is still waiting for this Giannis deal to go through, whatever it might look like. I do think it's noteworthy that over the course of the weekend, after we got all of that noise that a Giannis deal could potentially happen soonish, that all of a sudden you did hear, well, Boston's really thinking about Jaylen Brown. Because I think one thing has become absolutely clear in all of this process. I don't think Milwaukee likes Miami's deal. Milwaukee is trading away the best player they have had maybe ever, and at the very least since Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. They are trading away a bona fide champion, somebody who loves the city and whom that city loves, and they don't want to trade him to, you know, Miami for what they consider pennies on the dollar. And, you know, I don't care. Like nobody likes Khalil Ware enough to convince themselves he's enough for Giannis. Nobody likes Tyler Hero, even if he's from that area, enough to say that that's enough for Giannis. Miami has like an okay pick in this year's draft. And after you trade for Giannis, those picks become a lot less valuable, unless they're far enough off into the future that you could convince yourself to say, like, oh, maybe Giannis won't age that well. Miami's trade package right now, as it was for Kevin Durant and as it was for Damian Lillard, has been pretty mediocre. And Milwaukee doesn't like it enough to pull the trigger right now. So what they're hoping for is that between now and the draft, and I do get the sense that they would like to get this done on or before draft day, but I don't think it's like some hardline deadline. They would like to get this thing done before the NBA draft on Tuesday. And if they, you know, what they're hoping is that between now and Tuesday, somebody will come here and make an offer that is better than Miami's. And honestly, there's, if I were Milwaukee, there's no real rush. I know people around the league would like for this to happen already so that, you know, the rest of the stuff around the league can start happening with this big kind of domino out of the way and with the momentum that is usually caused by that domino. But for right now, everybody is just kind of like sitting and waiting, and they're doing their due diligence on the draft and they're preparing for the draft. And that's what the Lakers are doing as well. But let's talk about the Isaiah Stewart and Khalil Ware aspect of it. So Isaiah Stewart, Khalil Ware, as we have talked about on the show, they're fine additions. Like, I really, really like Isaiah Stewart, to be completely honest. I am a lot more nervous about Khalil Ware because of how Eric Spoelstra seemed to feel about Ware over the course of the season, despite his immense talent and despite the fact that Miami was really trying to win for all of last year. Both of those guys, like, they are fine additions. I think what the Lakers are kind of looking to do there is get discounts on potential, you know, high upside additions to the roster, especially in Ware's case, where they would get a discount on one of those guys by way of facilitating a Giannis trade. And like, I don't think that, like, the Lakers would be falling over themselves to trade for Isaiah Stewart if he was just, like, available on the market. I don't think they would be falling over themselves to, you know, trade for Khalil Ware if he was just available on the market. I think Rob Pelinka in the front office is very aware of the fact that, like, neither of those guys really fulfills Luka Doncic's demand for an A-list center. So, like, I think from the Lakers standpoint here, it's kind of a, well, you know, if we can help get this deal across the finish line, you know, maybe you could grease the wheels here. We can grease the wheels and people can grease everybody's wheels. That sounds really bad. And you know, the Lakers could wind up with a likely backup center. No, like, I don't think Khalil Ware would be the starting center next year. I don't think even Isaiah Stewart would be the starting center next year. I think the Lakers would still have some work to do there to fill that position. So with both of those guys, I think the focus was a little bit too player name centric. And when in reality, I think the bigger story is that, once again, the Lakers are not leaving any stone unturned that would lead them to a better situation across their roster at the center position. That is a position that, you know, you guys who listen to me longer term know. I've been telling you guys this all year that I think, and there are people in the Lakers organization who also thinks that if you have Luka Doncic, that the center position is maybe the most important other position on the roster, seeing as that player helps make Luka better. And that is the position that Luka most directly makes better. So that has been their focus. That has been their focus since Luka got there, right? Luka got to the Lakers after they traded for him, and he immediately told them, yeah, you know, I think I function best with a lob threat center, with a rim running and lob threat center. Luka's focus tends to obviously be on the offensive side of things when it comes to roster construction. So that's where it's kind of up to the front office to supplement Luka's demands with a, you know, with enough talent that balances out the way that Luka kind of sees the sport. And so, like, while, you know, Isaiah Stewart is somebody who I've talked about and I like quite a bit, Khalil Ware I'm quite a bit lower on, to be completely honest. I just don't know that there are very many examples, and we just went through this with DeAndre Ayton. I just don't know that there are very many examples of centers who, like, entered the league with a lower motor, eventually realizing and, like, maintaining a higher motor. That's just not something that happens very frequently. So Like, that's why I'm a little nervous about Ware, and I'm much higher on Isaiah Stewart. But yeah, I think that, like, you know, from the Lakers standpoint, they are very aware of what it is that Luka wants at this position, and they are doing everything that they possibly can to fulfill those demands at that position. And then once they have that taken care of, they will use whatever remaining resources that they have to fill out the rest of the roster and optimize the rest of the roster, depending on which center it is that they go with. But I would be absolutely dumbfounded and shocked if they went into next season with DeAndre Ayton and Jackson Hayes and even some draftee as their center rotation, because that would be tantamount to Rob Pelinka telling Luka Doncic in his camp outright, sorry, man, just couldn't get it done. And that's not typically how, that is not how Rob Pelinka operates at the onset of these partnerships with superstars. All right. Let's really quickly, I just want to check this because this is, all right, we're good. I also wanted to, I want to talk about this Luka pressure, right? The notion that the Lakers are on the clock. I talked last week, or was it the week before? I talked about how Luka fans who rooted for him on the Dallas Mavericks often accuse Lakers fans of taking him for granted, right? And Lakers fans, they, you know, in defense of Lakers fans there, Lakers fans don't have the kind of emotional connection to Luka that Mavericks fans do, right? The Mavericks drafted Luka. He was there for, you know, several years. They watched him grow up. They watched him reach the Western Conference Finals. They watched him reach the actual finals. They defended him as, for whatever reason, nationally, media people just talk about this guy in absolute ridiculous ways. Like, Mavericks fans have this connection with Luka Doncic that, like, right now, as of right now, Lakers fans just do not have. And, you know, from that standpoint, talking about, you know, the Lakers being on the clock by way of Luka sometimes leads to a sentiment where Lakers fans will be like, fuck this guy. Who is he to demand anything of the Lakers, of the Los Angeles Lakers, right? And that's where Mavericks fans would be like, this guy's about to save your shit all over again, right? You guys were just rescued by LeBron James, and then the front office took him for granted. And Luka fans who've been paying any attention whatsoever to the Lakers are like, we do not want to watch that happen with our guy on this side of it, right? And I completely understand it, frankly agree with LeBron fans who feel like LeBron has been taken for granted, and Luka fans who are concerned that Luka could also be taken for granted by a front office that has been coddled by ownership, right? So I when it comes to the pressure that Luka is applying on the Lakers, I actually really liked the conversation that Pete and I had about it on Friday, where we both agreed and said, this is good pressure, right? This is Luka and his camp making it crystal clear that, like, no, man, you guys told me to be okay with going into last season with a roster that we all knew could not viably compete for a championship. You kicked the can down the road, and breaking news. This was earlier. CJ McCollum stays with the, I missed that earlier today. I must have been napping. But Luka and his people are making it very, very and abundantly clear to the Lakers that you guys told us to be patient. You guys told us to wait for the summer of 26. You guys told us that there would be, that you guys have all of this cap space, and that cap space would lead to a much better roster for Luka following the summer of 26. You guys told us that you guys would be in on Giannis. You guys told us that you guys could even potentially be in on Jokic if he gets frustrated. You guys told us all of these things. You sold us all of these things, these potential additions to the roster that would give our guy a better chance at winning a championship than he has ever had in his career, right? And meanwhile, the cost of that, the opportunity cost of looking ahead to the summer of 2026 was not maximizing the opportunity that you had when LeBron was a year younger and Austin was like $30 million a year cheaper, roughly, whatever that number is going to be. And so Luka and his camp are just, you know, telling we've heard it from, I've talked about it on this show. Dave McMenamin has talked about it on his platform. And now you have Dan Wojcicki, who had previously reported with Sam Amick of The Athletic that the Lakers were on the clock. And Wojcicki, in a Q&A over the weekend, reiterated the fact that the Lakers are on the clock with Luka and his camp, with the reality being that he could depart, for nothing after the summer of 28. So that gives the Lakers this summer, next summer, and then if you don't have a bona fide title contending roster after this, and maybe even this deadline, you're going to start hearing about, Luka didn't ask to go to the Lakers in the first place. Luka doesn't owe anything to the Lakers. They traded for him at a time where they weren't ready to compete for championships. They were hoping that they would be able to. They didn't get it together. And either the people who are responsible for the situation and the predicament that Luka finds himself in with the Lakers have to be gone and replaced with people who will more viably surround Luka with title contending talent. Or Luka's going to start looking to maybe go back to Dallas or with Nico and everybody who was responsible for Luka being traded gone outside of ownership. You could have Luka looking around the rest of the league. Does he look at Denver and to go maybe play with Jokic? Does he look any number of other situations that might be better than the Lakers if they don't put the kind of roster around Luka this summer? And certainly after this following trade deadline, and for damn sure after next summer, like if after these two transaction cycles, after having kicked the can past a couple already, if the Lakers don't build a roster that Luka feels is title contention, is worthy of title contention, then Luka is going to say, "What are we doing here?" And he'd be absolutely right to do so. And this is the thing, man. Like, look, by the way, quick aside, they could figure this out. They could exit this summer with a roster that everybody really, really likes. And all of this will have been for naught. And this pressure would have been a positive force on the organization. I don't think there's a world where this is a negative force on the organization. It's a good thing when your superstars care enough to be like, no, make this team better. I am holding up my end of the bargain. Luka's like, man, I've stopped drinking as much beer. I've cut trans fats or whatever it is that like Luka has done to, revitalize his body. He's staying in shape and he's got, after having gotten into the best shape of his career, he's looking like I'm holding up my end of the bargain. What are you doing to hold up yours? And he's absolutely right to point that out. So this pressure that we have, heard of now a few times over is, I think, very, very real. I think it's the kind of thing that the Lakers are very, very aware of. Rob Pelinka, not only from this standpoint, but also from the standpoint of trying to impress his new ownership bosses, is very aware of what's on the line here. And hell, Jeannie Buss is to a certain extent on the line here as well, where yes, Mark Walter, I believe granted a, three-ish year window, to Jeannie Buss and her people to, play a part in basketball operations while the rest of the organization gets built out around them. And if things go well, that they could maybe maintain that you know, status moving forward. But if this summer doesn't go well, and if it continues to get back to Mark Walter, that, you know, Rob Pelinka, who by the way, like they hired a an analyst for the coaching staff over the weekend, but they still haven't hired that assistant GM, you know, for draft purposes. We're 2 days from the draft. You know, they've had weeks and they haven't filled that position. So, like, if you're Mark Walter, you're looking at this and you're saying, all right, at what point does Mark Walter start talking to his people and saying, how do we get rid of these people with cause? You know, how do we, like, you know, and so Luca's applying his pressure. Eventually, if this thing doesn't get sorted out, Mark Walter's going to start applying his pressure. And it's on us, quite frankly, as Lakers fans too, to apply our pressure and make it known from whatever, in whatever ways that, you know, we are demanding a certain level of capability from this front office as they build out this roster too. That's part of the whole reason for this here channel that you guys are listening to. We're all rooting, frankly, for the same thing. We want this team to be the best team that it could possibly be. And if that roster isn't put together in any small part or large part due to some of the shortcomings of this still very thin front office, then this very thin front office got to go. You got to bring in people, hopefully very quickly, who could come in and persuade Luka Doncic to stick around while they actually give him the roster that he expects. And maybe, just maybe, you can kind of resuscitate this whole thing. But all of this noise about, you know, what kind of center Luka wants, what caliber center Luka wants, what caliber roster Luka and his team expects to see next season, all of this stuff, we should continue to like fan those flames. Let's go, more of it. Let's go, keep it coming, because I truly believe that this front office and Rob Pelinka and this ownership group, the previous ownership group, the Buss family, and most specifically Jeannie Buss, grew far too comfortable just telling LeBron, you know, just wait this out. We'll see what we can do. Like it grew far too comfortable. And now they're you know, the more that their feet are held to the fire, the likelier it is that either they build the roster that we're expecting or demanding them to build, or they are replaced with people who are capable enough to do so. All right. I left a half hour here to get to as much of your guys' questions as we can possibly answer. Cool. Let's dive on in. Scroll to the very, very top. We have some super comments, which means we get to play the most important sound on the show. Fuck Washington! A quick reminder, too, by the way, to those of you who are tuned in, please hit that like button. Please hit that subscribe button. Turn on notifications, yada, yada, yada. All right. Let's start with Justin Tindall, who writes, with the pressure Luka is putting on Pelinka, with the pressure Luka is putting on, if Pelinka doesn't get it done this summer, do you think Pelinka is fired before the season? Before the season. That's a great question. It's the zillion-dollar question. I have always been of the mindset that so long as Jeannie Buss is in charge of basketball operations, Rob Pelinka is safe. Rob is her guy, right? And there are explanations for why that is, frankly, okay. If you look at the world through Jeannie's eyes, right? She demands loyalty. Rob has been nothing but loyal to Jeannie Buss. She demands support, and she demands a positive kind of cultural environment. You know, she wants people there to be getting along, and she likes a kumbaya environment. Rob is plays his part in that world as well. On top of that,
you know, Rob is the closest, one of the closest links that she has back to Kobe, somebody who matters a whole bunch to her as well. Rob was there with her and supported her after Magic just peaced out to tweet. Rob put together a roster that eventually won a championship. Rob was there when the Lakers acquired LeBron James and then traded for Anthony Davis, and then most recently traded for Luka Doncic. There are set, like, if you are Jeannie Buss and you are looking for any and all reasons to continue to employ Rob Pelinka, they are there. But if, again, Jeannie is told, and you know, we've seen her fire her own siblings already. If Mark Walter sees how this, you know, search for assistant GMs and attempts to build out the rest of the organization go, if he sees how Rob's attempts to build out this roster go, and he walks away from it unimpressed, he's going to have an uncomfortable conversation with Jeannie Buss, and he's going to say, do we think we can do better here? Are you willing to be here with us as we look to do better? And what Jeannie's response to that would be fascinating to watch. She might at that point just say, you know what? I'm going to step aside and let you do your thing, hire your people. If I'm going to be here, I want to do this with Rob, with the Rambi. I already got rid of Tim Harris, you know, and that's already one of my closest allies gone. You know, and if she decides that this is, you know, like it, Rob would be kind of the final step here, that she would not want to be here without him, then that's her call. But I do think I would be pretty shocked if Rob was fired before the season, unless like this offseason goes absolutely disastrously. But, you know, to kind of continue on the theme of Luka Doncic applying pressure, if Luka leaves as LeBron is getting ready to retire, or if Luka starts applying pressure or like making it known that he is so unimpressed by this front office and their ability to build a roster around him, if he, you know, starts making enough noise that he is getting ready to peace out, then to a certain extent, Mark Walter doesn't really have a choice in the matter. At that point, he basically has to say, hey, I have to protect my investment here. I have to bring in people who are going to convince Luka to stay long term and build a roster that convinces Luka to stay long term. And unfortunately, based on what I have seen dating back to, you know, my purchase of the organization and what I've seen from Rob ever since, you know, that's just not him. And so a lot is riding on this summer for Rob Pelinka, whether that means immediate removal or eventual removal. You know, Rob has basically everything riding on his ability to, and starting with the center position, as I've been talking about a lot, Rob has everything riding on making Luka happy enough so that word never, ever, ever gets back to Mark Walter if Luka is ever kind of looking at greener pastures elsewhere. All right. Let's keep on going here. The next question comes from... All right, so I'll address this one. Bashir Jama, just thought I'd get this across to you, but your good friend Mark Stein said he hasn't heard anything about us in the Giannis multi-team deal. Different sources, perhaps? Yeah, I mean, like, we all talk to very different people. I do believe that Mark is very plugged in to the extent that he can be, being, you know, kind of more focused on Dallas than on the Lakers specifically. But what I believe is going on here is that, and as I've been trying to say, when the Lakers have been talking to Milwaukee and when they've been talking to Detroit and when they've been talking to whatever other teams could potentially be involved in this deal. It is like none of these talks have meant anything imminent, right? The Giannis trade may have seemed imminent, and the Lakers benefiting from a Giannis trade either as it's happening or shortly thereafter could be a possibility. But the Lakers talking to Detroit and talking to Milwaukee have been very surface level. I've tried to hammer that home. The Lakers have been interested in Isaiah Stewart. They have been interested in Isaiah Stewart specifically as on a potential discount if the Lakers do help facilitate this trade. But you know, the Lakers, you know, they're focused on Austin Reeves' new contract right now. They're focused that they've had conversations with Utah about Walker Kessler and a potential sign and trade there. They are focused on all kinds of stuff around the league. And remember, this is a very thin front office. So to a certain extent, there's only so many hours in the day that Rob Pelinka on his own can fill here. So when Mark says that he hasn't heard that the Lakers are specifically involved in any kind of multi-team deal right now, I have no reason to not believe him other than whatever I'm hearing, which is that, the Lakers have been in touch with Miami. They've been in touch with Milwaukee. They've been in touch with Detroit about some of the players who could be going from, X starting place to Y destination. And a lot of that, like everything right now in NBA circles, is revolving around this Giannis deal. And once that domino falls, you'll see kind of a cascading effect around the rest of the league as everybody kind of exhales and says, finally, all right, can we have this conversation now? And as it stands right now, the conversations that the Lakers have had about Isaiah Stewart, about Khalil Ware, very surface level. And like I said at the very onset of the show, the focus shouldn't be on those two players specifically. The focus, the story here, is the Lakers' efforts to get center talent that would make Luka happy, because everything that the Lakers do and all of Rob's efforts to remain employed start there. All right. Thank you, everybody. Salute to the lounge. Happy Father's Day. Happy Father's Day from all of the people, like to fathers who are watching this, to those who have fathers, to those who have lost fathers. I hope everybody had a great Father's Day weekend. It was an interesting one on my end, but they always tend to be. Let's run UNLV. Seeing Rob backed into a corner is kind of satisfying. You know, that's what Pete and I were trying to get at at the tail end of Friday's show, which is it's kind of a dark way to look at this, but either we as Lakers fans get the roster that we can confidently go into next season with that would persuade Luka to kind of ease off some of the pressure there. Although I really hope Luka, like, so long as Rob is there, I think Luka needs to hold his feet to the fire the whole time, right? Like, we saw LeBron sign that multi-year contract with like no outs and all that stuff. And I think if he had that to do again, I don't necessarily think he would do that all over again. I think, Rob is the kind of, president of basketball operations, and Jeannie Buss is his kind of boss who it's like, all right, we're going to do enough to, assuage you here for a bit. We're going to calm the waters, and then we can all kind of float along, right? And I just think that whatever superstar it is, like in this case, Luka Doncic, but so long as Rob Pelinka is there, I think superstars always have to put his feet to the fire. And what I would prefer is that the Lakers would fire him and bring in a GM or president of basketball operations who doesn't need that, who just builds good rosters without the fear of losing his job. But as at least for the time being, that doesn't seem likely. It is, I'm not going to lie, kind of nice to see Rob's feet held to the fire here, because I just think everybody has grown far too fat and happy, which is ironic coming from me, but far too fat and happy over the last couple of years. Let's go next super comment here, and then I'll get to some of the questions from Twitter, and I'll probably do a mailbag specific episode here probably tomorrow, where I answer the iTunes questions there too. Laker Dodger guy 23, what do you think the percent chance is that Pelinka can't trade the 2025 pick and he drafts a combo guard? Would not surprise me if that happened. If that is the one position that the Lakers just flat out do not need, right? We all agree. We have enough creativity from Luka and Austin, and maybe even likely enough LeBron James potentially. The Lakers want to bring back Luke Kennard. They want to bring back Marcus Smart. There is no need for a combo guard. We are good. And if this hypothetical that Laker Dodger guy is bringing up here, where the Lakers go like, oh man, we really wanted to get a center, we really wanted to trade this pick, we really wanted to do this, but it just so happens that the best talent available is a combo guard, I would lose my mind. I would go over there. I would on the air apply Joker makeup. You know, I'll even have the jacket sitting off camera over there, and I will do the rest of the show on draft day, on draft night. Me dressed up as Joker because the Lakers just drafted another combo guard. My effed up heart could not handle that. My cardiologist would say, "What happened?" And I would say, "They drafted a combo guard." And my cardiologist would say, "Well, looks like that killed you." Like, I just don't think I would handle that very well at all. All right, next question here comes from, let's see. Dun, 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 dun. We have a lot of comments here. You guys have been active. Thank you. Ryan Lucas writes, why would Mark give Rob the chance to mess the summer up? All right. So I've kind of hinted at this in the past, and that's really the only extent to which I'm comfortable doing that here again. But essentially, the theory that is out there is that as part of the negotiations to buy the Lakers, without the Lakers hitting the open market, the demand from ownership at the time to the people who were buying the Lakers, Jeannie DeMarc, was, all right, if we keep the team off the open market, we are probably costing ourselves some money, right? And maybe not, but probably, like, that is how that probably would have played out, where if the Lakers would have hit the open market, there would have been enough offers competing with one another that the Lakers price would have actually gone up, and evaluation would have gone up from the $10 billion evaluation that Mark Walter bought the organization and the franchise at. And so by passing that opportunity up, the thinking is that Jeannie Buss, in a side negotiation that her siblings weren't aware of at the time, said, we will do this. We won't hit the open market, but I want my people in place for the next few years. And especially after the Luka trade, like, the thinking was, you know, we were getting ready to ride out the LeBron thing. Luka shows up. We want the opportunity to maximize Luka's prime. We want to be involved in that. We want to be seen as responsible for that. And that is what will get us to sign the dotted line without the Lakers hitting the open market. And So we have now a window of anywhere from 3 to 5 years after the time of purchase that Jeannie and her people have to be put, you know, kept in charge. And until that time is up, Mark Walter is going to keep his distance from basketball operations. The Lakers are continue to run as they were before. And that, you know, if you want to continue along with like the thinking here and the results so far, where the Lakers have struggled to find, to hire people and build out the infrastructure of this front office, you know, you've seen a lot of those practices continue where they lowball some candidates and where they, you know, where it's still incredibly tight circles who are more focused on not leaking than productivity. And we'll see how this all plays out here. Now, again, if Mark Walter starts to hear that his investment is being impacted by incompetence from the people who he allowed to leave in charge, I'm sure there has to be some kind of language in the contract where he could fire them with cause. And so if the Lakers don't fill out their, the, you know, build out a roster this year, and if he feels like the you know, Rob and the Rambi and Jeannie are dragging their feet on building out the rest of the basketball ops team, and if he feels like that whole group of people are more of an anchor on the organization than they should be, then at that point, maybe the language exists that allows him to say, we tried and we can't get this done. And it just didn't work out. And so like when you ask, why would Mark give Rob the chance to mess this up? I'm led to believe that Jeannie negotiated Rob's opportunity to potentially mess this up. All right, next question here comes from all right, wow, got through all of them. Thank you very much. Let's see. I did ask for some questions here on Twitter, so I'm going to answer some of those, and then I'll keep an eye on the chat section, or I'll keep an eye on the chat while I'm going here as well. Where is it? Nope, that's not it. Here we go. All right. So the first question here comes from Bashir 41096. What happened to the Giannis plan, and is it still a failure if the offseason is a success? They planned for this and arguably have failed at it. All right. So this is an interesting one because it started as, like Bashir points out, the Giannis plan. And then sneakily it became, well, we're looking to benefit from a Giannis trade. And now it's like, D, we really, really hope that this works out. And, you know, they put so many eggs in the basket. This is why back at last trade deadline, I was, you know, pretty adamant and pretty disappointed that they once again kicked the can to this summer. And so to a certain extent, like if the Lakers at the very least don't benefit directly from Giannis being traded, that marks failure to at least some extent, right? You planned for that aspect of this summer. You were correct in predicting that he would eventually be leaving the Bucks, but you didn't take into account his disinterest in playing in the Western Conference and the factor of geography as it has played out, at least according to reports. Who knows? Like, it might just be that the Lakers, you know, blow Milwaukee away somehow, some way, and Giannis winds up a Laker, and then all of this would be hilarious to listen back to. But as it stands right now, if the Lakers at the very least aren't involved directly or benefit directly from a Giannis trade, it would be, you know, even if you don't want to call it failure outright, it would be incredibly disappointing. And then even furthermore, right, if after this Giannis trade plays out and after the league is reshaped by that Giannis trade, if the Lakers don't walk away from this summer with a roster that is at the very least better than the one that they had last year, then I think Lakers fans would have every right to boo Rob Pelinka anytime he is shown on the big screen there at Staples Center. So, or whatever we're calling that building. So I like, that's where I would say that, like, you know, as far as the Giannis plan goes, they have tried to move the field goals to a certain extent. And it just, I don't think Lakers fans should stand for that. So we'll see how it plays out. Hopefully in the next 48 hours or so, Giannis gets traded and we see who all is involved in it. But as it stands right now, planning for the summer, like, they opened up so much cap space and they planned for this summer. And what is coming from the summer is like we just saw Oklahoma City send Aaron Wiggins to Atlanta for 2 second round picks, right? And the Lakers were thinking coming into the summer, well, maybe Oklahoma City and maybe Denver and maybe all these teams, as they, you know, approach various aprons and tax payments, that maybe they make some of these difficult decisions and we can benefit from some of those difficult decisions. But what I always wondered at the time and still wonder even more loudly now is like, well, why would they help the Lakers specifically? There are 28 other teams that OKC and Denver and whatever other team could potentially work with that wouldn't directly help the Lakers, you know, as they employ Luka Doncic in the absolute peak of his powers. So that's what we've seen from Aaron Wiggins going, like, we'll see what other moves that OKC makes to lower their tax bill and make that roster more cost effective as some of these extensions start to kick in. And but like this notion of like, yeah, you know, maybe they'll just send us Isaiah Hartenstein for the sake of being cheaper. I always thought that OKC was going to do everything in their power to make sure that if they did have to get rid of a Hartenstein or a Dort or any of those guys, that they would try to send those players to anywhere other than teams that they would be competing for championships with here moving forward. That's not just the Lakers, right? Like, they probably wouldn't want to send Hartenstein to like the Spurs, and they probably wouldn't want to send Dort to, Houston or whatever. But I think the Lakers are on that list, and some of these teams that the Lakers are competing against and have this, the Laker tax on, some of those teams are going to be like, all right, we know we have to do this. We're going to rip off this Band-Aid eventually, but is there any way that we could rip off this Band-Aid that wouldn't directly help those guys? And that's the scenario that I fear the Lakers may have overlooked. Alex AC717, could Wiggins have helped the Lakers? Not a needle mover, but would he have played significant minutes for LA? I think he would have helped. A perimeter, a stable perimeter defender capable of knocking down three pointers. Like, give me those guys. You know, the fact that guy had years left on his contract and still went for 2 second rounders. Whereas you compare that to like the value that the Lakers continually face when they have to move money, right? And it's like, yeah, the Lakers have to attach so-and-so draft assets to so-and-so's contract because it's seen as a negative asset. Like, you know, Wiggins was such a positive asset that even with everybody very cognizant of how desperate OKC is to shed salary, they still were able to move Wiggins without giving up anything, you know, without attaching anything to him. They got stuff for him. You know, it's only 2 second rounders or whatever, but that's better than, like, I saw the example that was out there that, like, when Reggie Jackson was moved by Denver, they had to attach 3 second rounders to Reggie Jackson to get off of his contract. And so, like, Wiggins is good enough that he could still fetch 2 second rounders given the situation that OKC find themselves in. And he also plays a position at that, like, two-ish spot, 2/3 spot that, you know, the Lakers, like, if the Lakers could have traded for Wiggins, I would have been over the moon. And, like, that would have been, I especially at that price, I would have been thrilled. But it didn't happen. He's an Atlanta Hawk instead. Atlanta, by the way, one of those teams that I was told going into the summer was a Austin Reeves suitor. They have since extended CJ McCollum. They used some additional space to trade for Aaron Wiggins. I think that takes the Hawks completely off of the board for Reeves now. And now if you look at, you know, that's off the board or they're off the board. We'll see what happens with Detroit. And if they trade for Tyler Hero, that would take Detroit off of the board for Reeves. And that would only leave Brooklyn as the possibility, you know, of a team that could make a real offer to Austin, a longer term, big, like max type offer for Austin. But as we've talked about here on the show before, you know, they drafted 3 or 4 ball handlers in last year's draft. You know, would they really want to open themselves up for that crowded backcourt situation there and also pay through the nose to do it? You know, we'll kind of see, but yeah, Atlanta, like, you know, has gone from potential Austin Reeves suitor to completely off the board altogether, which, you know, if you're one of those Lakers fans who was a little wary of the max number that Austin could potentially sign at, you know, that's good news for you. Let's see. Okay, so this is an interesting question. Larry P. Asks, I haven't heard anyone mention this. Does the fact that Aaron Mintz is Walker Kessler's agent make it harder for the Lakers? He seemed to be an antagonist for Pelinka with regard to Randall's free agency. And the Paul George dance seems like a sour relationship. Yeah, I those situations were definitely impacted by, now it's kind of a chicken and egg situation, right? Like with Randall, right? You know, was the Lakers' disinterest in bringing him back the reason that Aaron Mintz eventually was so frustrated with the Lakers that he, you know, advised Paul George to stick it out in OKC, maybe. You know, same time, Aaron Mintz's job is to put his clients in the absolute best situation that he can. Personal issues with front office executives aside. And an example here is how Mintz might feel about, and how Kessler's, you know, representation might feel about Utah on the whole, where they're like, look, man, this guy's been a good soldier. He hasn't played when you guys told him not to play. He got that surgery really early in the year, cost himself an entire year. He's done all kinds of losing for you guys. And now you're on the other side of this where he needs to get paid or should get paid. And you're talking about this and that and the other, and you're leaking the kind of contract that you feel like he should sign to, you know, to apply public pressure to our client that way. Like, even with all of that, those issues set aside, or even with those issues being mentioned, it's on Walker Kessler's representation to still realize, if this is the reality of the situation, that Utah might still be the best place for his client. Now, if you're the agent of a player who, you know, plays the center position, there are very few better spots for you than being the starting center on a Luka Doncic team. And that's, you know, even while Mintz might feel a certain way about Rob Pelinka and about the Lakers as an organization, he might still feel like, God, I don't wish this wasn't the case, but it is. The best place for you to be, Kessler or Walker, is to be with the Lakers, and we're going to try to get you over there. And so I don't think that any animosity there would hold up that situation, mostly because I think the majority of the animosity felt by anybody here is from Kessler's camp towards the Utah Jazz. All right, I am going to go ahead and dip because I am in full anticipation of a whole bunch of emergency podcasts over the next week or so. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in and supporting the show, however you have over the course of it. Please hit that like button. Please hit that subscribe button. Please turn on notifications for the show and for YouTube. If you guys are listening to it in podcast form, like I said, please subscribe wherever it is that you get those podcasts. And then use that promo code HMA on Prize Picks, make a $5 lineup, and get $50 worth of free lineups of your own. And until tomorrow, when I'm probably going to be doing a full-on like mailbag show, have a great rest of your guys' evenings. Make somebody else's, and I will talk to you guys tomorrow. Happy Father's Day, everybody. You too, Dad.